All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and I've decided to give you guys a special. No horror comics, but something a little different. I just happened to find these in my comic collection, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know I had these. So, Fantagraphics released, I don't know how many volumes, I only have two, but they released two volumes of Restored and Remastered Young Romance, which is the best of Simon and Kirby's romance comics. Yes, that's Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. This is pre-Marvel. Remember, before Marvel was a big comic publisher, they put out... before they were the big superhero comic publisher, they put out romance, westerns, and a bunch of other things. And this is their romance stuff. So I'm kind of curious, how good it'll be. And of course, it has aged a little bit. Some of this stuff, 1947. This is during the good old days, I guess you could say. And some of the stuff, it's either going to sound really offensive or really based, depending on who you are and which generation you're a part of. So we'll find out in the comments, I guess. But all right, guys, let's go ahead and get started with Simon and Kirby's Young Romance. Now, there is quite a few here. We're not going to be doing all of them. And, of course, there's the postcode era. There's a long introduction here. If you get the volume yourself, I suggest you read it. It would take me all... It'd probably take me an hour just to read the introduction. But let's go ahead and get started with the first book. The story of a girl who learned her lesson through heartbreak. I guess I was jealous of my own aunt. That's why I swore I'd get even with her when she called me boy crazy. I love Clint, Susie. It's my last chance for happiness. I want you to stay away from him. You're too late, Aunt Martha. Clint loves me. To those who once professed to be my friends and who now condemn me as a wicked, selfish adventuress, I am writing this true story of my terrible mistake. This is not written as an apology. In fact, I am not certain, but that I would do it all over again had he above given me another chance. That is why I ask no forgiveness, no solace for the ache in my lonely heart. Signed, Susie Burnett. Had my parents been alive, my life might have run a truer course. I lived with Aunt Martha, who looked even younger than her 35 years. I sometimes think I was jealous of her. Another date tonight, Susie? Who is it this time, that pimple-faced Jensen boy? Please, Aunt Martha. Is he coming here to call for you? Well, no, I'm meeting him downtown. It's much more convenient for him. You'll come to no good the way you're carrying on with a new boyfriend every night, Susie. I'm only 17, Martha. I like to meet new boys. Don't make an old woman out of me. That's just the point, Susie. You're a little girl playing house. Someday you'll flirt with the wrong man. You're playing with fire, my dear. Thanks for the advice, Martha, but try using it yourself. Goodbye, darling. That's the way it was with Martha and me. I could never confide in her like other girls did in their mothers. She was always so sarcastic. She cut me deeply. Golly, I'm late for this date. Oh well, Ted will wait forever if I want him to. I don't know what attracted me to Ted Jensen. I met him on a double date, and he seemed to prefer me to that washed-out blonde he was with. It gave me a sense of conquest. I thought you'd never get here, but I'm glad you made it. You mean you thought I'd stand you up? Why should I do a thing like that? Oh, forget it, honey. I don't take any stock in what people say. My, what a reputation I'm acquiring. You've been talking to that blonde, I see. She's jealous of you, Susie. Forget it. There's a carnival in town. How about it? You're so persuasive, Ted, my sweet. Lead on. We took a trolley to the carnival, and I thought of Stanley Jordan with his new red convertible. I knew Stanley was a good friend of Ted's. Susie, I've never felt this way about any girl before. Someday, Susie, when I get a better job, I'd like... Ted, why don't we ask Stanley Jordan along sometime? We could have loads of fun with his car. Sure, Susie, I guess so. Well, come on, silly, we've arrived. All off for the carnival. The carnival was such fun, but soon I noticed Ted counting the change in his pockets. I'm afraid we can only afford one more ride, Susie. Oh, Ted, just when we were having so much fun. Well, let's try this one. Meet you in the center of the track, Susie. You'll have to catch me, Slowpoke. Ted wasn't very fast. When he looked down at the instrument panel to see how the car operated, I was off. Oof! Don't you know you have to stick out your hand to make a turn, honey? Ouch! You're much too inexperienced to drive by yourself, sugar. Why not let me drive you to your home? You wouldn't get far in this gadget. I've got a better one. I've got a better one than this outside. How about it? A real car? I'm tempted. Sure, it was a dirty trick, but it was so hot and sticky for a trolley. Well, a girl is young only once. So your name is Rodney Middleton. So what? As long as you have this beautiful car, you'll learn to love me in time, baby. I didn't learn to love Rod that evening, although we had a swell time. It was late when Rod took me home. Thanks for the ride, Rod. I better go in now. Wait, Susie, you're not going to drop me like this, are you? I meant those things I said to you. When can we go out again? Really, Rod, I'm dated up for weeks. Call me. Dated up for weeks, huh? Am. Rod was getting so serious he scared me. I dashed inside. Martha was in the living room. She had a caller. Oh, hello, Martha. I didn't know. Susie, it's 2 a.m. So it is. You're up late, Martha. Susie, Ted Jensen was here. He was worried about you. I'm worried about you too, Susie, child. I'm sure your niece will be all right, Martha. I'd completely forgotten about Martha's caller. Now I looked at this brave knight who thought he was rescuing me from a tyrant aunt. He seemed younger than Martha. Our eyes met. Mine wavered first. Youth is so wonderful. Let the girl have her fling. Who's your friend, Martha? Yes, Martha, where are your manners? Introduce us. Susie, this is a friend, Mr. Roberts, Clint Roberts. Now go to bed. I hope we'll be seeing more of you, Clint. Good night. His name is Mr. Roberts, Susie. Clint Roberts, the name stuck in my mind and rolled on my tongue. He couldn't be more than 30. I thought to myself, much too young for Martha. He's shorter than Ted, not as rugged looking as Rod, and I'll bet he doesn't dance half as well as Gil, but what is there about him that makes me feel this way? We didn't see Clint Roberts for a week, and then I noticed Martha making with the glamour using her most expensive perfume. Having company tonight, Martha? Not Mr. Roberts? Yes, Susie. Aren't you going out this evening? I think I'll stay in tonight. I'm beginning to appreciate our home. I was curled up in the living room. I was the audience waiting for the curtain to go up when Clint arrived. Martha was uneasy. Come in, Clint. I'll take your coat. Well, we have company, I see. How are you, Susie? Clint Roberts, what a surprise. How well you look tonight. Susie, don't you have some schoolwork to do? Auntie's baby must get her beauty sleep. Oh, Martha, don't be old-fashioned. I'll bet Clint Roberts isn't much older than I. I'm sure Mr. Roberts is bored with your childish prattle. Frankly, Martha, I get a kick out of this niece of yours, fresh as she is. But I am not fresh, Mr. Roberts. Vivacious, pert, full of life, but not fresh. You're precious, Susie. I haven't laughed like this in weeks. Laughing becomes you, Clint. It keeps you looking young. Martha tried her best to stay in the conversation, but it was a lost cause. I knew Clint was attracted to me, and then... Clint, I have a miserable headache. I do wish you'd excuse me. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Martha. Anything I can do? Thank you, no. I'm sure Susie will entertain you. Good night, Auntie dear. That was my victory. I'd been jealous of Martha, of her beauty, her glamour, humiliated at the way she kept reminding me that I was a baby, and now I'd taken her man from her. As I look back now, I see the hollow victory it was. Look, Susie, why don't we take a ride, stop for a cocktail, or is it soda that you drink? The night is young. No thanks, Clint, I'll see you again. Call me, will you? I had suddenly lost interest in Clint. I wanted to gloat. When I went upstairs, Martha was still up. Feeling better, Martha? Stop smirking, Susie. I want to talk to you. About Clint, Martha, he asked me out. Susie, I don't know I know you don't care anything about Clint. That's why I want you to listen. It's different with Clint and me. You know, Susie, I'm not at the age anymore in which I can indulge in teenage crushes. This is my last chance for real happiness. This is serious, Susie. I love Clint Roberts. Really, Martha? At your age? In the reflection of her mirror, I could see the hurt in her eyes, and for a moment I was sorry, and then... You're a mean, contemptuous little fool, Susie. Every young man in town knows what you are. Boy crazy. Martha! I won't give up, Susie. I'll fight for Clint, and don't think I'll miss a trick. Clint wants a woman, not a child. My pity for her vanished and was immediately replaced by a soul-searing hatred. We didn't speak for days. Later one evening, she answered the phone. Oh, Clint. Hello, how nice of you to call. I'm fine, darling. I was wondering. What happened to Susie. Yes, she's here. It's for you, Susie. Thank you. Clint asked me for a date, and I said I'd love it. When he called for me, Martha was in bed. I have something to ask you, Susie. How about the yacht club? We can talk on the pier. Sounds exciting. Clint was strangely silent as we walked out to the end of the pier, lined with its sprawling cruisers and romantic little sloops. Then he spoke. Susie, you know my background, don't you? Let me see. You're a successful author, a fascinating bachelor. You were a war hero. You're terrific, Clint. What I mean, Susie, was that I'm, well, not a bad catch. I can support a wife in good style. I'm steady, and I'll be devoted. My heart stopped as I waited for him to ask me. This was indeed a moment of triumph. I turned to him. Yes, Clint? Well, you see, Susie, I wanted your consent before I asked your aunt to be my wife. His words hit me like a thunderbolt. I looked up at the moon and then down at its reflection, rippling in the bay. The tears in my eyes made a grotesque distortion of his face as I looked up at Clint. You want to marry my aunt? Susie, don't! Faced with the thought of losing Clint, I suddenly realized I loved him. Oh, Clint! Clint! Don't cry, Susie. Please don't cry. I didn't mean it, Susie. It's you I love. Can't you see? I was afraid you'd think me too old for you. Clint, I love you. I love you. It was almost daylight when we left the pier. We'd been talking of houses, gardens, furniture, and kids. How stupid I'd been before this, I thought when I said I was alive. Clint, it's dawn. Much as I hate the thought, darling, we'd better leave. We floated home on a cloud, and he kissed me good morning. You're my own, Susie. My very own. Susie! It was Ted Jensen. I'd never seen him so angry. Out with another guy, Susie? Where did you find this one? See here, you young hoodlum, I'll... Don't, Clint. Don't lose your temper, buddy. She's not worth it. You'll find out soon enough that she's boy crazy. Don't pay any attention to him, Clint. I once stood him up for another fellow. You did that often, didn't you, Susie? Your aunt was worried. Don't be an old fuss, Budget Clint. Martha's jealous of me. Good night, sweet. Good night, gorgeous. Martha was waiting up for me. I stood facing her defiantly. Well, Aunt Martha, Clint asked me to marry him. What are you going to do about it? Do you love him, Susie? Yes, Martha, I do. Truly, I do. Then I'm glad, sweetheart. I'm glad you're going to settle down. I should have known I couldn't compete with you, Susie. I hope you'll be happy. Martha meant what she said. Perhaps I misjudged her. She was so brave when Clint called on me. You're going to be my nephew soon, Clint. Imagine? You'll be a wonderful aunt-in-law, Martha. Susie, I've rented a shack in the mountains to work out on a new novel. It's about you, darling. I'm really inspired, but you won't be seeing much of me for a few weeks. But Clint, you've got to learn patience, Susie. An inspiration can't wait. This novel will give us a great start. We'll build a dream house and you'll have all the things you've ever wanted. I thought I knew what I wanted, but when the days stretched into weeks, the loneliness engulfed me until I could stand it no longer. It won't do any harm to see an old friend now and then. Let's see. Rod has a nice car. Hello, Rod. You hadn't called me in weeks. Why don't you take me riding tonight? Rod was easy. In less than half an hour, his big car pulled up to the house, and then Martha was standing between me and the door. "You're not going out with Rod, Susie. Please step aside, Martha. I won't let you, child. You're ruining your life." "I'm not a child, Martha. I'm warning you. Don't delay me any longer. Now, will you move aside?" Slap. "Susie!" I was sorry. So what? Why was she always interfering with my life? I fumed. Oh, if I'd only listened to her. "What took you so long, baby? Rod, take me for a long ride. Take me where I can see people. Some of the gang are throwing a party tonight, Susie. They got a cottage on the beach. How'd you like that? That sounds keen, Rod. Let's hurry out of this dead town." Once more, I was drinking in the raptures of youth. And when I arrived at the party, I knew this was my life. "Here we are, Susie. Like? Hey, it's Rod. And woo, woo, what a dish. Come on in, join the cats." The music was blaring, the lights were dim, the laughter was gay. I was in heaven. Then, "Hey kids, look at me. Who wants to join me in a swim? Count me in, Angel. How about it, Susie?" I borrowed a swimsuit and we were off. "Susie, you're my dream girl. Don't ever take that suit off." "You just wait there, baby. Old Rod is going to show you what a man you're out with." "Rod, you're not going to dive off that ledge. You might hit a rock in the water." "Bah! I've done this dozens of times. Here goes nothing. Rod!" We were alone now, and I was frightened for Rod. I climbed down to the water's edge. "Rod, I don't hear you. Rod, are you all right?" I searched for the spray of pounding surf. Then I saw him. He was in trouble. "Susie, I'm hurt. Rod, hang on. I'm coming out to get you." I found his limp form and clutched at it. I vaguely remember trying to fight the surf. "You were right, Susie. I hit a rock." Then the waves closed in on me and I lost all sense of being. When I woke, I was on the beach. "She's coming too, thank goodness. You're lucky we found you, Susie. You were almost a goner." "Rod, what about Rod?" "Susie, you did the best you could. You gotta rest." "Rod had drowned. It was my first contact with death and I took it hard." As for me, my pictures were in all the papers. "I brought you the morning papers, dear. They say you're a heroine." "Martha, has Clint been here?" "Here I am, Susie. I read about it in the newspapers and rushed down to see you. How do you feel?" "Oh, Clint, dear, I'm fine. Wait a moment. I'll dress and be right with you." "Why, Clint, darling, what's wrong? You look so peculiar." "Susie, I don't blame you for what you do. It's just that you don't know right from wrong." Man, if that was ever a true statement about these young women these days. "Since I saw those pictures in the papers and read the story, I've been doing a lot of thinking. You'd never be happy with a dull person like me, Susie." He turned and slowly walked out of the room and out of my life. Though I knew that I would never love anyone as I loved Clint Roberts, I didn't call to him. "Susie, ask him back. He loves you. Beg for his forgiveness." "No, Martha. I haven't seen Clint since, and sometimes when I'm alone in my room, I think of him and wonder if he'll ever return. Well, that's the story of my foolish campaign against my aunt. I never thought my victory would turn into a lifelong defeat. I'll always miss Clint. Always." Win cash prizes for your true romance. We'll pay $50 in cash for the most interesting and unusual true romance stories. Now, that doesn't sound like much right now, but it was quite a bit. $25 first prize, second prize $15, third prize $10. Yeah, this was big money back then, guys. The pitiful story of a girl who could find but one solution to her tragic love. "Well, Marjorie, this is our last time together. Perhaps if we had never loved, you might have been spared this. I'm to die in the chair at midnight." "Woo! I can't live without you, Sam. If you die, then I'll die too." Why does the furtive vessel of stolen love inevitably come to tragedy on the rock-bound coast of human experience? This true romance story offers no answer, but is a perfect example of the undeniable truth. Kate, she saw tragedy cast its shadow, but her warnings went unheeded. Marjorie had only her youthful courage to face the world which frowned on her love. Sam, was ready to sacrifice everything to be with Marjorie. Everything. Even his life. Although I was almost 5 years older than my sister Marjorie, I never had to play big sister. We shared the same happy outlook, interests, and secrets. That is, until Sam Ford came along. Going out with Sam Ford again tonight, aren't you, Marjorie? Yes, I am. I like Sam. I love to be with him. I'll continue to see him as often as I like. But Marge, Sam is engaged. No good can come of that kind of a friendship. Please listen to me. Goodbye, Kate. Don't wait up for me. Poor love-stricken little Marjorie, emerging on the threshold of young womanhood and accepting this hopeless situation with the untried optimism of youth. Marjorie! Marjorie, why won't you listen? And handsome, mild-mannered Sam Ford, foolish but sincere, disowning his promise for the light-hearted charm of youthful Marjorie. As I watched them leave together, I felt it again, the chill of impending tragedy. Sometimes I wonder where all this will lead to, Marge. Breaking off won't be easy. Meanwhile, we've got each other, Sam. I know it's difficult, and I'll wait forever if I have to. This is mad, Marge, but you mean so much to me, I can't turn back. We'll see it through, Sam, my darling Sam. It had taken time for Sam to decide between his betrothal and his newfound love. In that interval, his fiancé had guessed. It must have been sheer torment to lose a man like Sam Ford. I'm going to tell Ella tonight. She's all heart. She'll understand. Oh, Sam, I'd give anything not to hurt her this way. Please be gentle with her. Yes, my premonition of impending tragedy was well-founded, for when Sam visited his fiancée that evening, Ella, are you home? She can't be anywhere else, Mac. Not in the condition she's in now. She's dead. We're from homicide. Are you Sam Ford? No, she can't be. Ella! Oh, good heavens. Don't touch anything, Ford. Your girl died of cyanide poisoning, Ford. Know anything about cyanide? There are a few things that need explaining, Ford. We're booking you on suspicion of murder. The dread misgivings that plagued me exploded into shocking reality and snowballed into a fearsome nightmare that enmeshed us in all its hideous consequences. Oh, Kate, I'm frightened. What will they do to him? Oh, Sam! We know Sam couldn't have done it. He was with you that evening. Poor Sam. It must have been maddening to endure police questioning while burdened with grief. Why not spell it, Ford? We know the facts. What was the motive? Was there another woman? Come on. We know you bought the cyanide. Why? We know you poisoned your girl. Why? Only your fingerprints were on the bottle. You murdered her. Why? Why did you do it, Ford? We're not out to get you, Ford. We'd let you out right now if you'd clear up the motive behind your fiancé's death. We checked your girl's activities. She was playing square. If she committed suicide, it was because of you. Why? Who are you shielding, Ford? The days that passed were agonizing for Marjorie and for me. The newspapers tore hungrily into the mystery that was Sam Ford. Marjorie and I read them daily, sick with fear. The circumstantial evidence closed in on Sam and throttled his every chance. Then one day, Kate, Sam is gonna die. No, they can't. Marjorie, what's wrong? Marjorie, what are you doing? I'm doing what I should have done from the first. I'm going to Sam. Marjorie, listen to me, I beg you. Don't stop me, Kate. I must go to him. He needs me, Kate. Get out of my way. I'm going to tell him it was I who Sam was with. I've got to save him. You crazy little fool, I won't let you. You can't help Sam. Nobody can. If you tell the police that you're the other woman, you'll only substantiate Sam's guilt. You'll become the motive for his supposed crime. But I've got to do something. I won't let Sam die. I couldn't live without him. Sam knows what he's doing. He knows they'd involve you as his accomplice if you were found. He wants to spare you that. He wants to spare you that. Don't you see? I don't care what happens to me anymore. If Sam dies, I want to die too. Oh, Kate, I love him more than life. What can I do? What can I do? You've got to stand fast and have faith. That's what Sam is doing. Something will turn up. It always does, even at this late stage. As the day for Sam's execution drew closer, I kept a sharp watch over Marjorie. She had become listless, seldom spoke, and gazed silently out the window for hours. I was worried. And Sam, What thoughts were racing through his mind with the grim shadow of the electric chair almost upon him? No use hoping for any miracles. In a few hours, I'm gonna fry. I'd give anything for a last glimpse of Marjorie. Poor kid. She'll take this hard. You got a visitor, Ford. Your last. In here, miss. I don't want to see anyone. Leave me alone. Sam, I had to see you. I just had to. Marjorie, you shouldn't have. You got 2 minutes. That's the rule. I had to risk it, Sam. I couldn't stand it any longer. Sam, what have they done to you? Listen to me, honey. You gotta forget about me. I'm guilty. They've proven that now. I don't believe you, Sam. I've made up my mind. When you die at midnight, I'm going to kill myself. Nothing can separate us. Not even eternity. I could hear Sam's outcry of protest at Marjorie's hysterical words. Then the guard emerged with my sister, who shook with sobs. Sam's cries of anguish still reached my ears when we left. Marjorie, don't! You mustn't! But unknown to Marjorie and myself, Sam was released from his cell a half hour before his execution was to take place and taken to the office of the warden. Ford, it seems the observant eye of a new tenant has probably prevented a miscarriage of justice and most likely has saved your life. Saved my life? You mean I'm not? One of the people who occupied your old apartment found this in an obscure part of the room in which your girl died. Clears you of poisoning her. Why, it's a suicide note written by Ella. Yes, your fiancé died by her own hand. We'll make preparations for your release. It's almost 12 o'clock. Marjorie, you think I'm... Warden, it's a matter of life and death that I be released right now. I've only got seconds to spare. Well, there are a few routine matters to be taken care of first, but I can well imagine the new horror that gripped Sam as Marjorie's words came back to him. His pleas must have touched the warden because he left the prison in a police car that tore through the city to our apartment house. Oh, if we had only known what I wouldn't have given to know about Sam's release. Marjorie had withdrawn within herself again. I remained close to her and watched the minutes tick slowly away. Tick, tock, tick, tock. The stroke of 12 was like a ghastly signal. A wild, mournful cry escaped Marjorie's lips. I found myself sprawling as she dashed by me like a thing possessed. Sam, I'm going with you. Marjorie! No! I don't know how long I screamed. Perhaps I never stopped. I'll hear those echoes until my dying day. Down below, a crowd quickly gathered around poor Marjorie's broken body. And when I saw the police car pull up and Sam get out, I fainted. It's been a year since Marjorie's death. As for Sam, I seem to think he died that night too. Whatever lit the gentle light in his eyes and transmitted his wonderful personality is gone. Possibly forever. A love that grew in the shadow of Sam's tragedy has destroyed his spirit. He's in the next room now, where I visit and attend him each day, hoping against hope that in time perhaps a fresh spark, a brighter spark, will make him live again. You see, I love him too.
Wow.
Is there room for love in a heart filled with hate? A former enemy sought the answer to this timely problem that many a German girl now faces in this gripping convention story of an occupation soldier's Fraulein sweetheart. Wow, okay. You've been out with the American soldier again. How can you be happy in his company after what the Americans have done to our people? I can't understand it myself, Kate. All I know is that I love him truly, deeply. My name is Annelies Hohn. I live in a town of Marburg in the American occupation zone of Germany. There were strange conquerors, these Americans. The first day their infantry and armored columns entered Marburg, I stood in the silent crowd and watched the old young faces under the mud-caked helmets and was moved by a quality about them that was different from the stone faces of our own troops on the march. I hated the Americans and gave them no further thought, that is, until the raid. What a night the CO picked for a raid! Wish I'd never heard of this town! Stop gripping, Smitty. Who knows? Maybe we'll run into some good-looking Fraulines. Wake up, Kate. The Americans are at the door. It must be another raid. Why can't they leave us alone? Haven't they done enough already? All right, let's get out of that sack in there. Open up. Don't open it, Annelies. We've done nothing. They have no right to disturb us this way. I must. They'll break down the door. Oh, these Americans. Sorry, Fraulein, but we'll have to search your rooms. This is a precautionary raid extending throughout town. We're looking for arms and contraband. You know, Sarge, these Fraulein's aren't bad. Maybe we can date them. It was always the same. We were Fraulein's to these men. Not just girls, but Fraulein's. Their interpretation of this name carried nothing but insult and sly insinuation. Get this straight, Smitty. We're here on business. What you do in your free time is your affair. But as long as you're on my detail, you'll just do your job, see? Aw, Sarge, they're only a couple of Fraulein's. I should have been furious. We had no arms nor contraband, but somehow the soldier's insult had lost its sting. It was the sergeant who held my interest. He was a Yankee conqueror, aloof, impersonal. Yet when our eyes met in brief glances, I turned soft inside. The search lasted a few minutes, then... Thanks, Fraulein, you've been more cooperative than most. Cooperative? We have no choice but to be cooperative. These stupid raids only add to our misery. Kate's outburst angered him. I could see his hatred for us leap like flames in his eyes. To him, we were Nazis, the enemies of his democracy. Don't kid me, sister. You people are hardly eligible to complain about misery when you've inflicted it on the whole world. Good night. When the door shut behind him, I yielded to the tears which I could no longer control. Yes, I've wept. I wept for the peace I could not find, for the only man I could ever give my love to, the man who could only return it with loathing and scorn. Why do you cry, you little fool? Someday we will fight again, and the American will pay for his insults. How could Kate, blinded by party fanaticism, know the reason for my unhappiness? I wanted love. I yearned for a touch, a caress, a kiss from this man who had suddenly kindled a fire where there had once been nothing but cold emptiness. Just outside the city, there's a little footbridge that crosses a river. Once the young men of Marburg walked there with their sweethearts, but now it is lonely and deserted. I went there the next day to be alone. You! Mind if I join you? Did I mind if he joined me? Would I have minded if the sun shone, the birds sang? If the barrier of hate between this man and myself would cease to exist, I still avoided his glance as I answered. If you wish, Sergeant. The name is Hamilton, Jack Hamilton. The afternoon flowed along like a tranquil stream. Jack was gentle, kind, and soft-spoken. We must have talked for hours. Golly, it's late. We've put away a lot of conversation. We'd better get back to town. Oh, Jack, it frightens me to think we might never meet again. Excuse me, we'll try that one again. Oh, Jack, it frightens me to think we might have never met again. We'd have met, Annalise, if not today, then some other day. But we'd have met. You see, Annalise, our meeting today was not an accident. I waited until I saw you leave the house and followed you. Are you angry? Angry? With you, Liebchen? Oh, no, Jack, I'm happy. So happy. Annalise, heaven help us both. The weeks that followed were glorious. Jack and I were in love, madly in love. I began to think that nothing would ever come between Jack and myself, but I was wrong. The past grimly waited for me at home. Kate saw to that. You're home late again, Annalise. I suppose you've been with your American again. Well, what if I have? You can tolerate the uniform your American wears because he is handsome, but can you forget this? This, your emblem to loyalty of the Third Reich. Remember the inscription it says? To Annalise Horn, for services rendered to the Fuhrer, 1943. Have you forgotten that you were a Hitler youth leader? Have you forgotten your fatherland these Americans are trying to destroy? How can you feel anything but hate for them? Yes, I've forgotten. I want to forget. Love does not choose between uniforms. Love owes allegiance to no party or fatherland. I can only be happy with Jack. I want no more of the past. Ha! Do you expect me to believe this great love has replaced your devotion to the Fuhrer? We are Nazis and will always be. No, I renounce my party rank. I love Jack! Although I shouted my love for Jack, I knew Kate was right. I could not deny my unfaltering belief in the glory and power that was the Reich and Adolf Hitler. I had been a Nazi since the day I was born. The party was my very life. To be anything but a Nazi was unthinkable. I must be sincere with Jack. He must know it will hurt him, but it will be a hurt that will mend in time. When I saw him the next day, it was Jack who led the conversation to the subject I feared most to discuss with him. Annalise, you just told me you loved me. I want to hear you say it again before. Before what, Jack? Annalise, when Hitler was in power, what did you think? I mean, what did you believe? Did you believe in what your country was doing? What does it matter now, Jack? We lost the war. It matters to me. Answer me, Annalise. Of course I believed in Adolf Hitler. He was our Führer. I am German. He was Germany. Oh, Jack, what has all this to do with us? We love each other. Isn't that enough? No, it isn't. What of the millions who were put to death? What of the slave labor, the destruction caused by your precious fatherland? But we were not told of these things. Am I to be blamed for crimes I knew nothing about? You're a Nazi, all right. You lie like all the others. Don't you have any feelings for the suffering? Don't you know what your people have done to the world? Yes, Jack, I know, but it was necessary. Germany will rise again, then I will be the conqueror, and you the vanquished, but I will still love you. Kiss me, Jack. But Jack did not kiss me. Instead, his features hardened into the rigid mask he wore the night of the raid. Jack Hamilton was lost to me forever. I realized him as he turned and walked silently across the field. Kate was lounging about as usual when I got home. My dejected entrance was enough to tell Kate the whole story. She hid her triumph behind a sly half-smile. Well, not out with your handsome American tonight. There is no more handsome American. So you finally come to your senses. What did you tell him? Nothing except that I was a Nazi. That was enough. That was unwise. However, the lovesick fool will probably keep the information to himself. Perhaps now you can concentrate on more important matters. Willie and Hans will be here soon. They have plans to discuss. Plans? Plans to do what? To blow up the military headquarters in town. And a few American swine with it. As a faithful Nazi, I should have received this news with more enthusiasm than I did. Willie and Hans were former SS men and knew their deadly work to grim perfection. The bomb is planted. It will explode at 6 tomorrow. It is time to fight back. But Willie, that's murder! Do you call carrying out the destiny of the Third Reich murder? The Führer has given all Germans a mission. Only we are fit to rule the world, and those who stand in our way deserve to die. The thought that Jack would be endangered by this mad scheme drove me to risk the suspicion I had already drawn from my so-called friends. That night I passed a note under the door of the constabulary headquarters. However, I had forgotten that Jack was familiar with my handwriting. To Kate, Willie, and Hans. The discovery of the bomb was an unforeseen accident. They were discovered and imprisoned by the denazification court. Jack stopped me in the street the next day. Annalise, I want to talk to you. Annalise, I won't ask you. I won't ask you how you knew of the bomb, but I want to thank you for saving many lives in my outfit. I also want to say goodbye. Goodbye? You are leaving? Yes, Annalise, I'm going home. We'll probably never see each other again. I'll always love you, Annalise, but... Yes, I know, Jack, our worlds are too far apart. Your world is bright with promise. Mine still smolders from dark hatreds. You're learning, Annalise. There's good in you. You've proven that you're capable of loving sincerely. That's a good beginning. Keep that love alive in your heart. It will be bright. It will be your bright promise. Auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiedersehen. I know it. Auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiedersehen. I know it, okay? I wanted to plead, to beg, to throw myself in his arms and tell him how deep my love really was. But he was hurrying down the street before I could cry out to him. For one brief instant, he turned and waved to me, and then he was gone. Auf Wiedersehen, Liebschein! My American was but a tender memory now. He had opened the door of my heart so I could see a little more of the truth. I knew now what Jack had been trying to tell me, that one cannot harbor love and hate in the same heart. That one must love everybody in order to love it all. The sun suddenly splashed the shadowed streets with warm light. Was it an omen? All right. He was all that a girl could hope for, and they were engaged to be married. But Joyce knew that the day would come when he would have to meet her family. She couldn't face that day without shame. I could never believe it of you, Joyce. You're the one girl I never thought would lie to me. David must never know about my background. I can't risk losing his love because of the difference in our social positions. All my dreams and hopes are at stake. My own daughter treating me this way after all I did for you. Ha! I always said she was an ungrateful little snob, and I was right. I was more fortunate than most girls who work in busy offices and never realize their desire to marry their wealthy, handsome bosses. I was private secretary to David Stanton Jr. of the department store Stanton's, who made me the envy of my co-workers when we became engaged. Will that be all the dictation for today, David? Office hours are nearly over. Clock watcher, I'll drive you to the train. I returned David's love with all the sincerity my heart could offer. Keeping his love meant everything to me. I guess that's why I lied to David. I foolishly created a mythical family of social position equal to his own, a family his people would accept but never see. I know your folks are still traveling in Europe, Joyce, but we must make our wedding plans. Yes, I know, David, two people in love as we are should be married right away. We won't wait any longer, darling. I'll write Daddy today that his pampered daughter is simply mad about her handsome boss, who intends to fire her and make her Miss David Stanton Jr. You can write that to the old boy. A half hour later, I reached my station, the shanty district, a part of town which David Stanton's kind moved only as detached sightseers. It was a different world, a gloomy, shabby world, a ragged specter haunting my every step towards happiness. Hello, Joyce, how's your ma? She's fine, Mr. Smith. The drafty weather, beating the house on West Street, where I was born and raised, was still my home. Let's try that all over again. The drafty, weather-beaten house on West Street, where I was born and raised, was still my home. I longed desperately to flee from it, for comfort, security, and the warmth of David's arms. You're home early tonight, Joyce. We'll eat as soon as Hal comes home. I'm not too hungry, Mom. I'll just have some coffee and toast. I don't feel up to a big meal right now. All right, Joyce, I understand, child. Mom did understand. Handicapped by poverty and poor education, she had always used every opportunity within her reach to give me the things a cruel destiny had denied her. I got a surprise for you, Joyce. It'll look wonderful on you, honey. Why, Mom, it looks like a formal gown. How on earth did you manage to buy it? Oh, Mom, it's beautiful. You shouldn't have bought it. You must have spent your entire savings. Well, I have been saving a little here and there, and I saw this gown in an exclusive shop, and I decided I just had to buy it for you. You're so good to me, Mom. How am I ever going to repay you for the way you struggled to make this miserable existence a little easier for me to bear? Never mind, baby. You aren't like your brother and me. You're meant for better things. Do you think your young man will like you in this dress? Well, why? How did you know about... A woman can keep a secret from a man, honey, but never from another woman. I was never a pretty girl, but I was young once and very gay. When I would dress for a date with your pa, I'd look in the mirror and see the same light in my eyes that I've noticed in yours. Okay, for some of you younger folks, when she says she was very gay, that means she was very happy. Back in the 50s, gay actually was the term to mean happy. It's like I was young once and very happy. Bravo, bravo. Now ring down the curtain and rustle me some chow, Mom. This soap opera stuff makes me cry in my beer. Hal, if you must listen, I do wish you'd spare Mom your vulgar sarcasm. My brother Harold had disliked me ever since as a 3-year-old he had witnessed the affection lavished on me at birth. Although Hal possessed some admirable qualities, he was a typical West Street tough, daring the world to strike the chip off his shoulder. Well, pardon me for not bowing down at the waist, Duchess. Where'd you get the new dress, new boyfriend? Hal, you low-minded hoodlum. I'll show you who's low-minded. You and your smart set of ideas. I'll beat 'em out of you fast enough. You stop that, Hal. I bought this gown for Joyce. You've got no right saying such things to her. Who says I haven't? I'm part of family too, you know. Go ahead, Mom. Work yourself sick and save your pennies to put Sis in the blue book. Maybe one of these days she'll drop a dime in your cup when she goes slumming through West Street. Ah, poof! The wide gulf existing between David's family and my own revealed to me with terrifying clarity in Hal's crude display. The day the Stantons met the Owens would be the end of all my dreams. I was frantic with worry. I guess that takes care of business for today. Now for some pleasure, Miss Owens. Shall we say cocktails at 5? Oh, sorry, that's the wrong voice. I guess that takes care of business for today. Now for some pleasure, Miss Owens. Shall we say cocktails at 5? If my master commands, the slave obeys. Of course, David. Only when I was with David at the office were the social barriers lowered to admit me to my love. Every logical thought told me I was an impudent trespasser, yet my heart ignored all reason. But as David and I left the office building, my blood froze in my veins. Coming toward us across the lobby was my mother. I stopped transfixed by fear and indecision, and Mom's eyes' recognition flared but was instantly hidden by lowered lids. She rustled softly by me. We might have been perfect strangers. Anything wrong, Joyce? Why, no, David. Mom was still up when I came home that night. I didn't relish facing her after that shameful way I treated her. Oh, Mom, I must have been so cruel. Don't feel that way, honey. I understand. Now let's just forget what happened. Let's go to your room. I've got something to show you. Mom, what an adorable fur jacket. How did you ever manage it? That's my secret, Joyce. I just want to help you impress your young man. He looks very nice. That was Mom, always understanding and forgiving. I wasn't worthy of the devotion, loyalty, and generosity she showed me. I began to take this precious woman for granted. In a few days, I was my old self again as I faced David across his desk. Get your coat, darling. As soon as I'm through with this call, I'm going on a buying trip in the textile district. I'll need you along. And that's what rich people did. We're going to buy things! In the textile district. Oh, swell. I love to look over those stunning new styles. I had a wonderful time accompanying David on his buying trip. I was introduced everywhere as David's fiance. My heart kept joyous pace with our tour throughout the city. This is the last stop, honey. Evans and Case. This outfit handles brooms and mops and stuff you won't need when you're David Stanton Jr. Silly, I'd work my fingers to the bone for you, darling. As we entered the executive office of Evans and Case, I received a shock that drained my entire being of its gaiety and filled me with dread. That scrub woman, it's Mom. That's where the money for the dress and jacket came from. I'll finish in here. You can scrub the corridor outside. She hasn't seen us and she's leaving. If I turn my back, she'll never know I was here. David, be careful. Say, you people make some fine mops, Case. Crash! Oh, help! I'm hurt! It's the scrub woman. She's been cut. Mom, easy now, easy. We've got to get her to a hospital. This is terrible. Mom, oh, Mom, why did this have to happen? Joyce, I'm taking this woman to the hospital. Return to the office and tell them I won't be back today. Yes, David, of course. I called the office, but didn't return there. Instead, I walked the streets, my mind a whirling chaos of foreboding thoughts. Selfishly enough, David's discovery of my identity troubled me more than Mom's condition. It looks like it's all over now. My hopes, my plans are over. Suddenly, the enormity of the lie I was living filled me with shame. My behavior towards my own mother was abominable. This hunger for comfort and security, what had it done to me? What kind of creature had I become? And Mom, what a miserable disappointment I've been as a daughter. Something within me seemed to righten itself at that moment. I began to see things in a new perspective and found how little I and my self-centered plans mattered next to grand people like Mom and David. I was overcome with unbearable remorse. I guess I don't deserve either Mom or David's love now. Things will be better this way for us all. David, you've probably learned the truth about me by this time. You've watched me treat my mother with the air of a sympathetic bystander when she was hurt and needed a daughter's assistance. After behaving in this contemptible fashion, I could never face you again. This is goodbye, David. I'm so very sorry. And so I left town, went to another city where I could start from scratch, to make of myself the kind of woman who could face life with the courage the old Joyce Owens sorely needed. That happy pair might be David and me, if I hadn't been the silly fool I was. 2 months went by. I obtained a job, good lodgings, and for the first time I found a serenity I'd never known before. Then one evening, I had a visitor. Hello, sis. How I found you isn't important. What does matter is that Mom is kind of worried about you. Why don't you write, sis? I didn't think she'd ever want to hear from me again after how I acted. That's right, you certainly gave Mom a bum deal. I was angry enough to blow a fuse, but not Mom. She's soft on you, I guess. Always has been. She's the best, Joyce, and now she's worried sick over you. Oh, Hal, why did you come? I'd almost forgotten how rotten I'd been. Aw, oh, sis, it wasn't fair of me to hit low like that. I know it's been tough for you having to live with your mistakes. I'm sorry. Hal, I've tried so hard to be self-reliant, to make myself worthy of Mom's kindness. I've worked so hard. I know, kid. I've been keeping tabs on you. So has a certain other party. He was the angriest of us all. The softest, too, I guess, but that's easily understood. He's in love, the sap. It won't take much to make him come around. Hal, you mean David still loves you? Why, he's crazy about you. Fact is, we all love you, sis. Mom, Mr. Blue Book and me, why don't you come home? Oh, yes, Hal, yes. I want so much to go home. The people there are the most wonderful on earth. Okay. Just 1 year ago, this magazine published the story of Toni Benson, the girl they called Pickup. Okay, so this is a different character. So, all right, guys. This is where we're going to end it for now. Because I don't think we have enough time. You know what? We'll do one more. All right, just 1 year ago, this magazine published the story of Toni Benson, the girl they called Pickup. Our readers recognized Toni to be a living, heartwarming personality. For since the publication of her story, young romance has been flooded with numerous requests asking one question. Did Toni and her ex-gambler husband eventually find happiness in the town that didn't want them? We decided to get the answer from Toni herself. For we knew that unlike fictional characters, Toni's problems did not end with her marriage to the man she loved. There was still the town and Toni Benson. The world of Toni Benson and Stanley Budko was not a very large place. But it was warm, light, and happy. Stan and I had created it from the most divine of emotions and strengthened its priceless substance with a combined faith in ourselves and the future. When Stan and I were married a year ago, we took possession of this world and became its sole inhabitants. We've been man and wife 3 days, 5 hours, and 10 minutes. Any regrets, honey? Regret marrying the handsomest, most charming, and considerate man in the world? Surely you're joshing, Mr. B. That doesn't seem to be the opinion of the so-called respectable citizens of Bradley, Pennsylvania. Strange, I can't recall ever hearing of such a town. I don't believe it exists. Nothing is real outside this room. Stan, I don't understand your sudden change of mood. It's not like you to take such an issue seriously. The town has never taken either of us to its bosom, but we've never let it disturb us. It does now, Toni. Things have changed, you know. Yes, things have changed. We're married, Toni. Our happiness now depends on sound security. Security which we must find in Bradley. But darling, if you feel our prospects are uncertain in Bradley, why can't we try our fortune in some other town? Because Bradley is just as much to offer us as any other town in America. Because it's our town. Because we're not the running kind. You're right, of course. Oh, Stan, we were so happy a moment ago. Until the subject arose. I'm sorry, Pigeon. Back goes Bradley into the unfinished business file. Now, Mrs. Budko, how about some more laughs? You can't worm your way out of this unforgivable breach of married bliss, Stanley Budko. Put me down, you heel. Stan and I did the best we could to make a home of the room adjoining his small gas station repair shop. Stan was striving to develop his trade, and the weekly profits were barely enough to enable us to get by. However, we managed to put aside enough each week to pay for little improvements in our tiny living quarters. It's amazing what new wallpaper will do for a place. At a buck a roll, this paper should do miracles. That sounds like the phone, Stan. A motorist in distress, no doubt. I'll answer it. Ring! Okay, who is it? And where is this car stranded? Toni, didn't you hear me? Hey, what's wrong? Yes, Dr. Jenkins, as soon as I can. Goodbye, sir. Well, for Pete's sake, Toni, answer me. What's happened? That was Dr. Jenkins. Grandmother's had a bad attack. We've got to go to her right away, Stan. I'm afraid she's... Poor grandmother. Life hadn't given her many happy moments, only a stoic courage to withstand her tragic burdens. I'd been one of them, left in her care by a scandal which hounded my mother from town and caused the death of my father. Years later, Grandmother was to witness another scandal evolve from an innocent escapade with myself as the subject of gossip. My marriage to Stan left Grandmother empty and bitter, for Stan was never among the town's more desirable catches. I don't think there's any cause for alarm, Tony. Your granny's pulled out of these attacks before. Hurry, Stan! Please hurry! The Benson House, built by my father's family, rose tall and white above the stately old elm tree. Like all the other houses on Aiken Street, its lines bore the straight-laced propriety of Bradley's God-fearing elders. Maybe it's best that I wait out here, Tony. You know how your grandmother feels towards me. No, Stan, we go together. You're my husband, a man who can hold his head high in front of anybody. All right, chicken, I've nothing to be ashamed of. Grandmother lay motionless in the snowy whiteness of her great bed. There was little left of life in the ashen wax-like features. I didn't stifle the incoherent sound that escaped my lips in my unheeding dash to Grandmother's bedside. The years that bound us were snapping cords of living tissues that inflicted horrible pain upon us both as the hand of death reached to sever the last remaining strand. Tony, child, my poor sweet child. A bright light flared momentarily in the cavernous shadows of my grandmother's eyes. When her gaze fell upon Stan, he read the summons and came quietly forward. I felt his presence beside me, tense and waiting, unafraid of whatever might come from those bloodless lips. Stanley Budko, I've called you by many names, all of them bad. It is a sinful thing I must take with me. We sometimes forget, until the last moment, that we're nothing but clay, that judging others is the privilege of a higher power. You came to us from the dregs of town with a strange name and the stigma of that district. Yet I will call you son, for when I leave, you will be a Benson. Stanley's shadow stirred on the delicate patterns of Grandmother's blanket. It was obvious that the fading voice had drawn a reaction equal to the unexpected words. I go with faith, and both of you, my children, Except for my smothered sobs, the room was heavy with the stillness of eternity. Then there was the soft tread of Dr. Jenkins and the strong arms of Stan lifting me to the smooth folds of his leather jacket. Grandmother was gone, leaving in her passing a memory forever stamped in our hearts. Goodbye, Sarah. You were a good woman. A good woman. Stanley Budko, what I know about you is strictly town gossip, but I've been Sarah Benson's good friend for many years. Believe me when I tell you that hers were not merely the words of a dying woman. You are a Benson. At least you can be one. You'll know what I mean in a few days. Grandmother had evidently confided in Dr. Jenkins. What he meant to convey stood out in bold relief in Grandmother's legacy. Albert Reinbeck, the family attorney, underscored the meaning of it when he called Stan and myself to his office later that week. The Benson house and property now belong to both of you. That's about all there is. You mean the house is ours? Both of us? Yes, you're co-owner of the Benson House, Budko. It's a great stroke of fortune for an ex-gambler who can use the property for ready cash, but it can be an even greater gift to a man who's building a sound future. See here, Reinbeck. I know you operate a small gas station, but I'm also aware of your earlier affiliations. That's why, as a Benson friend as well as a legal advisor, I cautioned Sarah against this move, but she acted according to her own plan. A plan I still consider to be a fine woman's vain hope. I believe you said quite enough, Mr. Reinbeck. There was no intent on my part to offend either of you, Tony. Between lawyer and client, a spade by any other name is still a spade. I sincerely hope you prove me a cynical and suspicious old man. You've proven that yourself, Reinbeck. I'd advise you to look to your own linen. It's not as white as it appears. Indignant as you've made us feel, Mr. Reinbeck, we realize your intentions were not entirely tainted by prejudice. But I assure you that it affords us little comfort. Good day, sir. We were too preoccupied by thought to say much during the drive back to the gas station. Except for occasional glances at the surrounding traffic, Stan's eyes stared with smoldering intensity at some fixed object ahead, visible only to himself. How would his confused and tortured mind rationalize these unforeseen developments? I put an eye to the conflict in my own brain, and tabled all decisions for the near future. We're almost home, Stan. Is there anything you'd particularly like for dinner? What? Oh, why, whatever you serve tonight will do, honey. That evening, we received two visitors who, to me, were as unexpected as snow in July. Strangely enough, Stan didn't register any surprise at their sudden appearance. Whatever the purpose of the visit, I thought, there would be many a raised eyebrow among the town's influential families when it was learned that Amon Cleveland and his son Marshall paid a personal call on those questionable Budcos. Good evening, Budco. I hope you don't mind our dropping in like this. I don't, if you don't, Mr. Cleveland. Hello, Marsh. Hello, Stan. Seems like years since we played ball together at Hudson High. And you, Tony, a grown married woman. My, my. I'm sorry to hear about your grandmother, my dear. Won't you sit down? You know, Budco, unlike others in this town, I've always maintained that a man is entitled to live in a manner in which he chooses. His vices and virtues should be his own affair. That's how it really was in the 1950s, folks. That's a very liberal attitude, Mr. Cleveland. Unfortunately, in Bradley, such philosophies are a rarity. Oh, well, maybe it wasn't. But that's the way I have felt. A man's vices and virtues should be his own affair. Aha! Heh heh. How well I know, my boy. Don't think old Amon Cleveland has always escaped the town's wagging tongues. Like Marshall here, I sowed many a wild oat until the old man took a hand and pushed me nose first into the real estate business. Fact is, I still take an occasional nip and place a wager now and then. Yes, I remember seeing you quite often when I worked for McCready at the gambling casino. You usually did okay, too. Ahem, of course, well, a man has to relax from the pressure of responsibilities. But speaking of good fortune, Budco, I understand that you two found a large share in it in... a large share of it in Sarah Benson's legacy. We don't consider grandmother's passing good fortune, Mr. Cleveland. It's not what I meant, child. Sarah Benson's death was a great shock to us all, but nevertheless she's gone, and you two are in possession of the Benson house and property. Very valuable assets. Very, very valuable. Could mean a lot of ready cash for us, huh? 12,000 good American dollars. That's a lot of money in that time. That's a lot of money. Anytime you want it, Budco. That's what the real estate firm of Cleveland and Son thinks of that property. Anytime you want it. That's very interesting, Mr. Cleveland. But it's a little too soon for either Tony or myself to be thinking about any offers. Oh, now, we're not so callous to propose any deal at this time. It's something to think about, though. That kind of capital could go a long way towards easing the burden for a young married couple like yourselves. I see. Well, Marshall and I certainly enjoyed calling on you, youngsters. You're making a fine beginning here. You deserve much more encouragement than the community has given you. Good night. Shrewd young people, those two, so properly indignant at discussing business in time of mourning, and as eager for the money as we are for the property. I don't know. Seemed rather sincere. Stan was never a geranium, but he was a likable sort when I knew him at school. Don't be a complete idiot, Marshall. Budco has traveled with the worst element in town since he first began to earn his dollar. Tony and he are two of a kind. They'll turn poor Sarah's legacy into as much money as it will bring. We'll hear from them soon enough, mark my words. Until the coming of the legacy, the town's prejudice against both Stan and myself has cloaked its existence in the unpleasant silence of a glare and the evil hiss of distorted rumor. But now it stood on our doorstep, mocking and unashamed, a challenge to our self-respect. A dead woman had planned the situation, and somehow I felt she was watching the outcome. Tony, I wish to heaven your granny hadn't done this thing. I know all this has disturbed you dreadfully, Stan, but... let's not be goaded into any emotional decisions which only these nasty snobs would profit by. Ha! That's no lie. Those real estate jackals stand to make a pretty penny once they buy the Benson house. But that's not the real issue. You mean, we're the issue? Stan, we mustn't allow the town to invade our lives this way. It's bound to cause us great unhappiness. On the contrary, chicken... our only chance for happiness among these people is to wade into their own midst and establish a respected household to match any in town. That's our goal. That's our only way to peace of mind and a good life. We'll keep the Benson house, Tony. That's our beachhead. It'll take stamina and courage to secure it till we've won. Any volunteers for the mission? Here's one, mister. Sink or swim, I'm with you. I've never been more proud of anyone in my life. Incorporating the Benson House into our budget proved to be a mathematical impossibility. Stan and I worked diligently for hours on end until our fingers could no longer hold a pencil, until every channel of thought had been drained of its contents. I gazed warily across the table at Stan. He crushed another cigarette stub into the crumpled mass of its half-smoked predecessors and faced me with a foolish grin. Well, baby, these figures still add up to the same total. No can do. No, our present income will never meet the added expense of maintaining the Benson House. Of course, business is good, and getting better, but property taxes and needed repairs won't wait for future profit increase. We can secure a loan from the bank, Stan, pay it back in small installments while the business grows. Yep, might be the answer for a Smith or Jones, but not for a Budco. Old man Scott doesn't give loans to unsavory characters, remember? I'm tired, baby. We'll hit on an angle tomorrow. The likelihood of finding another solution seemed very remote to me at the time. I shed cold tears of frustration at the prospect of losing this opportunity to establish a proper household. We just had to get that loan. No matter what the bank president's attitude was towards Stan and myself, I was determined to persuade them to help us. I'd like to see Mr. Scott, if I may, please. And your name, miss? That's all right, Jennings. I know the young lady. Hello, Tony. Why, Bob. Bob Scott, my goodness, it seems ages since I've seen you. I came to see your father. Dad's busy right now. Maybe I can be of some service. Won't you come into the office? Thank you, Bob. I can use some assistance. A few moments later, I sat opposite this formal, well-groomed young executive in his patrician surroundings of rich leather and paneled oak. It struck me as inconceivable that only 2 years before, the same Bob Scott had led me on a madcap tour of nightclubs and involved me in a scandalous gambling raid. That this ingratiating voice addressing me so patronizingly had once so wrongfully called me Pickup. It's been 2 years, hasn't it, Tony? I understand you married that chap. What's his name? Oh, yes, Budco. Stan Budco. Funny my forgetting the name of a man who gave me a shiner. You've made great strides since those days, Bob. Surely you've become too big a man to harbor grudges. Oh, please don't misunderstand, Tony. I deserve that wallop for trying to run out on you during the gambling raid. I certainly was a wild, unprincipled stinker, wasn't I? And yet it's nostalgia. I feel rather than regret. Why should that be, Tony? Who can say, Bob? Life was made for laughs in those days. There was little time for cares or responsibilities. Yes, life then was great fun. Guess I was quite the cut-up. The pace has slowed down to a more dignified walk these past 2 years. I've married two, you know. Sophie Morrison, prominent family background. You must have read the papers. I've lived a most exemplary existence. It's a must for men in finance. Poor Bob. It wasn't difficult to see that his restless spirit had not completely adjusted itself to the rigid mores of his social group. However, this mutual reminiscing was consuming precious time needed for the effective presentation of my problem. I discreetly shut the door to the past and brought Bob's attention to the original purpose of my call. And that about sums up our situation, Bob. A loan at this time will help us hold the Benson House. Uh-huh. I see. Of course, you realize you may have to mortgage this heritage, unless Stan has other collateral. But that's putting the cart before the horse. There's Dad to reckon with first. His is the final word in these matters. I'll do everything I can for you, Tony, for old time's sake, eh? Dear me, how progressive this stodgy old banking business has become. How utterly revolutionary. But then it is so like Bob to blaze new trails. My meeting with Sophie Morrison Scott recalled to my mind the jungle sequence of an old movie in which the unarmed native, having been frozen into immobility by the ominous low rumble of sound behind him, turns slowly about and watches with terrible fascination the stealthy movements of the tigress as her sleek, cat-like shape emerges into full view. Peering out of Sophie's blasé mask was a predatory animal poised to spring. You have a talent for distorting what you see, my dear. This is Tony Benson. We were classmates in school. School must have been fun. I suppose you both were holding hands in those days, too. I must be going, Bob. Stan and I would be very grateful if the bank would extend us the loan. Goodbye, Mrs. Scott. I'll do my best with Dad, Tony. You can be sure of that. We'll get in touch with you. The quarrel, I knew, was brewing, broke in full fury before I had closed the door to Bob's office. The bank employees nearby made no effort to disguise their interest in what was transpiring. Each scrutinizing glance held its own nasty conclusion. I did my shopping that afternoon under a lingering cloud of apprehension, hoping that the unfortunate incident wouldn't jeopardize my chances for a loan. But Sophie Scott's jealous wrath was destined to provoke a situation with much graver consequences. When I returned home at 4, its dark shadow had already fallen. Why, darling, I didn't expect to find you in before supper time. Tony, where on earth have you been? Lots of places, Stan. The market, the department stores, the bank. Why do you ask? The bank. Just like that, you say it. The bank. Stan, what are you driving at? What's happened? You tell me, baby. There are 59 different versions floating about town, each one more sordid than the other. Oh, no, Stan, it couldn't have gone that far. Why, the whole thing is so ridiculous. I never dreamed it would have such repercussions. Stan. Sorry, guys. Stan, this is terrible. Yes, it didn't take the town long to make your little trip to the bank the day's number one topic. I almost beat the story out of Harvey Griffin when he stopped for gas and started dropping 6 cracks. My temper got out of hand then. I took off to confront Bob Scott for the truth. He became impatient and abusive. I think he'll need a new upper plate. You fought with Bob over such a silly... over nothing at all. Stan, how could you be taken in by such an unfounded tale? If there was any possibility of a loan at all, it's gone. Now, Stan, I feel so tired, so ineffective. Believe me, Tony, I never doubted you for a second. But it all happened so suddenly, like being hit by a rotten tomato. I just lost my head. I know this won't boost our morale, darling, but I'm going to cry. Forgive me, Stan. I just can't help myself. Cut loose, honey. I still got another shirt. Blast it, Tony. It isn't fair. This town just won't give us a chance. Well, I'm through playing whipping boy for the holier-than-thou crowd in town. I know someone who isn't squeamish about dealing with Stan Budko. Hello, operator, I want line 4-7301. Stan, whom are you calling? Who is this, Chips? Yeah, how's Trix? Listen, is MacReady in? I've got to talk to him. MacReady, the gambler. Stan, I won't let you do this. Stop it, Tony, there's no other alternative. Your granny didn't leave that house to anyone but us. Now I'm fighting for it and the only way left to me. Not that way, Stan. That's not what Grandmother wanted. Don't you see that it wasn't the house itself that Grandmother meant us to have, but the honest, decent life it represented? She would have rather seen us lose the house than our self-respect. I'll leave the noble ideals for such people as the Scots, Tony. They've money enough to afford righteousness. Hello, this you, MacReady? Listen, MacReady, I'd like to see you tonight. Sure, it concerns Doe. Yes, it's important. I'm in a spot, and you're the guy to help me. Okay, I'll be down in about a half hour or so. I'm going to see MacReady, Tony. When I get back, we'll have that house. But little else, Stan, using MacReady's money to build a good life would make a hollow mockery of everything we're striving for. We'd never know happiness again. I could never have bought this gas station without the money I earned at MacReady's casino. We haven't felt tainted by it so far. You can't sell me on that, Stan. If you go through with this madness, I won't be here when you get back. Slam! Well, that was his answer to that. I sat rooted to the chair, horribly shaken by the violence of Stan's departure. Time itself had disintegrated in one clap of thunder, leaving no past, no present, nothing visible ahead. Nothing remained but the firmness of conviction, a poor replacement for a shattered heart, but embodied with a sufficient strength to generate movement in my lifeless limbs. It's all over. It doesn't seem possible. Yet here I am, packing, leaving Stan our love, our plans. I can't do it. Heaven help me, I can't do it. I know what Stan is doing is wrong, but I can't walk out on him this way. Why has this happened to us? Why have we been driven to this insane behavior? We've tried so hard to live like decent human beings. Oh, sorry, you must be Mrs. Budko. Forgive us if we've intruded, Mrs. Budko, but we just had to see you folks. I'm Don Savoldi, and the big drop of water with me is Jack Fontaine. Please feel at ease, gentlemen. Can I be of any help? Out of my way, fellows. Tony, thank heaven you didn't leave. Stan! I couldn't go through with it, Tony. I never got to MacReady's. It suddenly struck me that I might really lose you. I knew that nothing in this world was worth that kind of sacrifice, Tony. Tony, how I love you! Oh, darling, I don't care what happens now, as long as we have each other. Stan, I was so terribly frightened. We hate to interrupt, but we're here on an urgent matter and we'd like to get it settled. Say, who are you guys? What do you want? A place to live for our wives and kids, Mr. Budko. We understand your folks own the Benson House. We've seen the place. It's got 10 rooms. Wonder if you'd consider renting some of those rooms? Jack and I are new in town, but we've got well-paying jobs at the steel mill. For a couple of ex-GIs, I'd say we're doing fine, except that the housing shortage in town has us... stymied. Outside of pitching tents in the park, the Benson House seems to be our only hope of finding shelter. Stan, we could maintain the house with the rent money added to our income, and the boys' families do need a place to live. $30 a month for 3 rooms for each of you. Also, a little cooperation when any of us need it, okay? Good deal. Sounds reasonable to me. We can meet that. You got yourself some tenants, Mr. Budko. It was a lovely day, a glorious day. The Salvotis and the Fontaines beamed happily when we met them at the gate of the Benson House. Stan and I were immediately aware of the affinity we shared with the pleasant young people. All of us were young, hearty, and eager to become a part of the town's vitality. Stan suddenly swept me up in his arms as the warm laughter of our newfound friends followed us across the flagstone walk, which led to the house. Let me try that all over again. Damn. As the warm laughter of our newfound friends followed us across the flagstone walk, which led to the house, happiness had returned. Okay. So that's where we're gonna end it. When we get back next weekend, we'll be hearing about Kathy and the Merchant of Sunset Canyon. Wow. Man. He's in nothing but rags. I wonder how this happened. I guess you'll have to find out next time. All right, guys. So if you like this, be sure to go to Patreon.com/Grimm's Dungeon of Comics and donate if you liked it. And make sure to share and, you know, hit that like button. All the good things. And support Fantagraphics if you like this stuff. These are old classic comics. You can actually get a physical copy of this. So do that. And I guess I'll be out. I'll see you next time.